produced by Jeffrey Cruselius, Joseph Cottrell and Ken Fuller. This is Yes Music Podcast, episode 609. Tales from Topographic Ocean's 50th Anniversary, a fan-made box set, part one.
Hi, this is Trevor Rabin, and you're listening to the Yes Podcast.
Welcome to episode 609 of the Yes Music Podcast, two fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine, and co-host, Mark Anthony Kay, will be along in a few minutes' time. You can always get involved with the podcast yourself via the various different ways on the site, yesmusicpodcast.com. This week, Mark and I take a look at and have a chat about what Yes fan Ian Hartley has done to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Tales from Topographic Oceans. A chap after our own 5% of hearts, he has taken things very much into his own hands, as you will hear. If you want to understand fully what we're banging on about, if that's even possible, then watch the video Ian made of the set, which I have embedded into the show notes for this episode over at yesmusicpodcast.com. Before the socials roundup, here's an excerpt sent to me this week by Jeremy North. It's part of the beginning of an episode of the Bugle podcast from Andy Zaltzman. This time he's talking to Stuart Lee and Felicity Ward about world politics, but listen to what they get into before they start that conversation.
I've never actually listened to a podcast. I don't really understand. And people keep saying, I lie actually, I listened to some that I was on when I was promoting a film, and I listened to them, I went on them, so I listened to them before to see what they were, but I'm not one of these people that people go running with them on, don't they? Yeah.
Well, I always get recommendations from other people. I'm like, right, got to listen to other ones. Yeah. People give me these recommendations. I listen to one episode, I'm like, not for me. I always just listen to This American Life.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. It's the only one consistently. There's one that I can't say. It's called The Bugle or something. But it's a lot of blah, blah, blah. I'm smart. I'm English, you know. And it wears...
I'm smart. I'm English is how you characterise all podcasts.
No, no, just The Bugle.
All right, just The Bugle. All right.
Have you ever thought about calling it The Buggle? I just thought it'd be cute.
Yeah. The Buggle. It could be presented by you and one of the Buggles.
Yeah.
I mean, Alan Horn could do it.
Is The Buggle something?
Oh, yeah. They were a band formed. They were a sort of new wave band.
Of course they were.
They were so technical that they became Yes, the prog rock band.
What?
Really? Yes co-opted them and into a version of Yes, basically.
Right.
And then Yes started to sound like a new romantic band for a bit.
It's like when you have twins and one eats the other one in the womb.
We've yes, all been there. The
Where haven't we? Yeah.
You must know Video Killed the Radio Star.
Yeah.
That was the Buggles.
And what is, of course it was.
One member of the Buggles is presumably a Buggle.
Right.
But it's spelt with two G's.
I mean, I think we need to just wrap the podcast up here. I don't think we're going to blow any more minds after that little fact.
Covered all we need to go.
Wasn't he? Video did kill the radio star.
Yeah.
He knew
it. What would he have made of podcasts?
Well, that's the rebirth of the radio star.
Oh, yeah, it is. In an unlicensed frontier. A young man, and Andrew O'Neill was explaining this to me the other day, that the podcasts have managed to make massive stars of people that we don't consider of any value.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Thank you, Jeremy. On the YMP discussion group on Facebook, Jeffrey Mason contributed a long list of items once again, including Rick Wakeman's Christmas Saving Strays charity concert, Bill Bruford's Japanese fan convention, Chris Squire's handwritten synopsis of Yes's Starship Troopers from the Yes album, a radio interview with Anderson, Squire and Kay during the Big Generator tour where they talk about the Yes album, an Oliver Wakeman interview, a 1972 photo of producer-engineer Eddie Offord, a concert photo from 1987, a Rolling Stone review of the Yes is the Answer anthology, a Steve Howe interview from earlier this year, a review of the new Rhino The Yes album box set, a happy birthday to Tomorrow frontman Keith West, another Rick Wakeman charity Christmas concert, this time in Ipswich, and news that Google has stolen Mark Anthony Kay's band name. Well, not really, but they are starting off their own AI Project Gemini. For his part, Doug Curran added, "Happy 50th anniversary to Tales. From the new box set of the Yes album, a recording of Perpetual Change with a Bill Bruford drum solo, live at the Yale Bowl in July 1971. The confirmed dates for the forthcoming European and UK Yes tour next year. The news that the Yes visual biography book, which features photos from Doug and from Keith Hoisington, written by Martin Popoff, is on offer. And an interview with Steve Luthaker, who loves Yes music." Joseph Cottrell has pre-ordered the Rick Wakeman Live at the London Palladium set, and H.B. Peterson shared John Anderson's recent sound paintings created by him and Soundwaves Art of Owner of a Lonely Heart. They look a bit odd to me, but you might like them, and they are on sale for charity. Mark Bradford Barber added a YouTube recording of Yes Live at the Hartford Civic Centre in Hartford, Connecticut, on April the 18th, 1991, and Brian Breen showed us what he's been up to. He says the photo shows Sweet Dreams in Braille. His choir at the Louisiana School for the Visually Impaired learned and performed this Yes classic. So many congratulations to Brian and his choir. Mario Juarez de Bosis, I do hope I'm pronouncing that vaguely correctly, shared a great photo slideshow thingy with lots of excellent Yes photos. And Raymond invited us to listen to the highly amusing Trevor Horn interview with the Rockanteurs podcast. Stephen Schinder and the Yes Shift crew have been busy interviewing David Cross of King Crimson and Peter Banks fame, as well as Dave Kirstner of Arc of Life fame. And Paul Hales points out that, according to Spotify, he is one of the 0.05% of Yes fans. It was just not bad. H.P. Peterson was back reminding us of the forthcoming Steve Howe Motive 2 release, and also the John Anderson Christmas EP available on YouTube now. It's very John, which is not a bad thing. Hector Salvador Plaza added a live shot from the Going for the One tour, featuring that Green North drum kit. Crikey, that's a lot this week. So thank you to everyone who's been in touch in any way this week, including the commenters on last week's show notes, Paul Tomei, Ian NB, Jamie McQuinn, and Doug Curran. Those comments, incidentally, are very much worth reading.
Yes Music Podcast, 12 True Summers.
Mark is with me now on the 50th anniversary of the release of Tales from Topographic Oceans, so you won't be surprised that we are talking about Tales once again. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Kevin. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Yourself?
I'm pretty good. We had a light sprinkling last night of snow. We had 2 centimeters. The dog was over the moon. He was running around like a little puppy in it, putting his nose into the snow and everything. So we have experienced our first snowfall, but it should be going away because tomorrow is supposed to be 11 degrees Celsius here.
Ooh, balmy. Yeah, lovely. Yeah. Okay. Well, it's pretty horrible and cold here, and just it hasn't got light today at all. It's been really horrible.
Really?
Yeah. Yuck. Anyway, let's get back to Topographic Oceans and wish it a 50th anniversary, a happy 50th anniversary.
Yes.
Released today. Now, unfortunately, and we've talked about this before, but we'll just touch on it again before we talk about Ian Hartley, who's done his own thing, but we'll come back to that in a moment. Yes, we've talked before about the lack of Yes 50th anniversary releases. There wasn't even a Close to the Edge official 50th anniversary release, and it's quite disappointing because there are going to be a lot of anniversaries coming up, aren't there? So Relayer, Going for the One, etc. in the next few years.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing about that is that a band like Yes isn't the only band to be sort of blamed for this sort of neglect. There are many other bands I can think of that had anniversaries come by that they neglected to, you know, celebrate, but For Yes, I'm going to kind of think that maybe one of the reasons might be not that their catalog is in the hands of another label. Maybe they don't really have a say in the matter. And
yeah, I'm sure that's true.
Of course, I'm guessing, though, that if Warner Brothers were smart, they should release something. I mean, I think there's more than enough people that would go and grab something. I mean, they did release the singles album. I mean, we know how much that's a big fan favorite among all of us here. that vinyl release. But, you know, if they released a 50th anniversary box set, I'm sure people would probably gravitate to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And particularly Close to the Edge, because that's the classic. But they missed that opportunity, and they look like they've missed Tales as well. However, what's happened is that fans like Ian Hartley have taken things into their own hands. And we've both watched this amazing unboxing that Ian has done. And also he's showed off his extensive collection. It reminded me of Tomato, my collection of Tomato, all these different things that he's got. And we'll have a very quick look at some of those in a minute, or just mention a few of those in a minute. But what he's done is created his own 50th anniversary box set of Tales from Topographic Oceans. And it's just remarkable. But I wanted to ask you, Mark, because you've got a lot of experience of this, what's actually involved in creating your own CDs, as he has done, and vinyl and packaging? So when you do it for yourself, and you've done it many times, as I say, is it any different to how the big companies do it?
Well, the process in general is the same. I mean, you have to, you know, get your artwork done, then you send it over to the company, and they'll align it. Well, if you do it yourself, there are like these little programs where you set the images into a template and make sure that it's in within their sort of, you know, restrictions, like how big the cover can be and how big this can be. And most people nowadays know how to do it themselves, but you can still have like a label, like let's say like Train Records, the people that I use, for a small fee, they can set it up for you and get it done for you. That process is pretty simple. As far as the recording goes, you just need to send them over a master recording, whether it's, and nowadays it's mainly digital. Back in the day, they would have, you know, a quarter inch tape that you would have to, you know, send over to them. But the process is the same from, you know, from small guy to big guy. But there's also a big difference between, and this is the thing I'm sort of interested in when we talk to, if we ever get to talk to Ian, is the legality of it, because for somebody now to take something like, you know, an album like Tales from Topographic Oceans and have their own vinyl pressed of it, unless you actually have the rights to it or ask permission to press it or get like a licensing agreement with them to say, listen, I want to release this. Can I have a, you know, a licensing deal for, let's say, a year or 2 years and be able to release it? You can't really technically do that. So I'm kind of wondering how this is, you know, being done on his end.
Yeah. It's fascinating, isn't it? Because this isn't the first box set I think he's done, having a quick look at his YouTube channel. And we are hoping to speak to Ian next week. And he does make it very clear that it's not available for sale. It's just something he's made as a one-off himself. But he hasn't just stopped at creating the box. And you know, that's difficult enough, I suppose, or expensive enough as it is. But he's also done remixes. And, of course, we know that John Dee is doing what he hopes will be officially released as the live Tomato Wembley concert from 1978. And he's currently working on that. And he's been remixing it and working with a studio engineer to do that. So it is possible. But tell us also about that kind of mixing. And presumably this is very recent. You couldn't do this back in the days of vinyl and tape and so on. It mustn't have been even possible to get a source record and create your own mix of it.
Yeah, I mean, this again is something that I'm curious about, because, you know, back in the day, the only way you'd be able to actually, quote unquote, remix it is if you get the multi-track tapes, because then that's the only way you can get access to the individual tracks and adjust them. Otherwise, and that's the thing that I think sometimes people get very confused with, is that they think that if they get a two-track master of the thing, that they can go in with equalization and stuff like that, that I can make the vocals come out louder and stuff. No, you can't do that. I don't care what people think or say, you cannot affect a voice using EQ. Okay, because the frequency level that a voice is in, let's say it's between, let's say, 800 hertz and 1.5K, okay, kilohertz. If you increase that bandwidth, you're not only increasing the voice, but you're increasing a bunch of the guitar. You're increasing a bunch of, like, you know, stuff from the drums and some of, maybe some of the low end of some, like, cymbals, like the rumble of a cymbal. It's not like you're just zoning in on one thing and increasing it. You know, that's you cannot do that with EQ or compression. You know, now with this advent of AI technology, which is really interesting, I've seen a site here where some guy put in his song and he wanted to make a video, right? And he put in his song and the AI wanted to listen to it and made a video for it, right?
Yes.
And the thing is, I gave him an option after it was done. And it took a while to process. Like, he had to wait like about a couple of hours. And then he came back to his computer and it was done. And it gave him an option to like, do you want to adjust the music? And it gave him on the side, vocal, drums, guitar. And he could individually affect it with the AI. But the thing is, again, that wasn't exactly perfect either. Because when he soloed it and heard his vocal, you could hear very faintly underneath the vocal a little bit of the music still.
Right.
So it's still not a perfect technology.
No,
that I'm sure the one that, you know, Peter Jackson uses probably a little bit more superior in technology, of course.
Yeah.
But you can't do a mix like that unless you have the tapes. And I'd be very shocked if Ian told us that he had access to a multi-track tape of Tales from Topographic Ocean. So I'm really curious to how he did any sort of a remix on this, unless. He used like a Stephen Wilson remix.
Yes. Well, these are the questions which we will wait to hear from, hopefully from Ian himself. And yes, I get what you mean absolutely about that EQ. And from my own point of view, I mean, it's only voice audio that I work with for the podcast. But the difference between having two people on separate tracks and having everything just squashed onto one track is huge for me, because you know, you have a different character to your voice, I've got a different character to my voice, so if I've got them separately, then I can make adjustments to them to make them sound better. But if I've got you and me, you know, both on the same thing, then if I tweak the high frequencies, then I'm tweaking your high frequencies as well. It's just the way it works. So yes, I can appreciate that. But going back to the CDs and vinyl, he's produced the packaging, he's produced the CDs and the vinyl. So are there actually, I suppose you might call them boutique labels or production companies that will produce just single records for you these days?
Well, I mean, I know if you go online, there's some places I've seen that do individual pressings. But from what I've understood, they were more like, how do I put this? They weren't like necessarily vinyl. They were like a different material that they used for these sort of pressings. And I had them done too. Like, I've had these sort of short run presses done of some of my earlier records. And this girl that does it for me at the Lacquer Channel, she does a fantastic job. And it turned out so good that I've had a few people say that it sounded better than some of their MoFi records that they've had.
Right.
So it is possible to get it done. But from what I saw in the video, it looks like it's vinyl. I mean, it may not be. It may be the same thing that I got done. And in that case, yes, you can get like, you know, one or two of them done as well. And again, this is going to be all important, you know, to get this information from Ian. But maybe, just maybe, he may know somebody within the industry who has a pressing plant and might be willing to do a couple of, you know, presses for him just as a friend, you know, on the side, you know, after hours or something. Who knows, right?
Yeah.
Because a lot of the times, I always wonder about this, because a lot of these sort of, I call them counterfeit pressings that you can find of other bands' box sets, they're never done in America and stuff like that, because there's strict copyright laws for this stuff, right? Yeah. Usually you find them overseas, and where Frank Zeff was quick to remind us that they're very loose with their copyright laws overseas. Right?
Yes.
So
okay.
You can get away with that a little bit easier, right? But I am curious to see what the material is of the vinyl that he was showing. Because it does look like it's a translucent blue, and there was like a red record as well.
Yes.
He showed us those color ones, right?
Yeah.
And that could be of that same material that I was talking about that I got mine done. It's really bothering me. I can't remember what the name of that stuff was that I had done, but it's not vinyl. It's like, it's almost like a plastic, right?
Right. Yes.
But the sound quality of it is really, really good still. So the technology has vastly improved for something like that. So it could sound excellent for all we know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to come back to his box set that he's created himself in a minute. But the first thing he does on this very long video, and I won't spoil the joke for you, but he does a very good joke right at the beginning of this video, which I've put on the show notes for this week on yesmusicpodcast.com. Very, very in joke. If you've been listening to our conversations about Tales, it's quite funny. Anyway, but then he goes through his collection, and it did remind me quite dramatically of my own obsession with Tormato. Although he didn't go into the cassettes. I don't think he collected the cassettes. Well, I've collected the cassettes. Anyway, we'll talk to him about that as well. Yeah. But a couple of the interesting things that he said about the sort of chronology of the different formats that he's got, and starting with CD. Interestingly enough, the first CD of Tales came out on in 1988. And just like Tormato and the other Yes albums, that was just basically a transfer. They did nothing at all to the music. They just threw it onto two CDs. And I think that's the one also that misses off the first part, the sort of introduction part before John Anderson starts the chanting. So that's gone. And he also showed a long box. I didn't realise that Tales was done in one of those long boxes things. And just for those who don't understand what I'm going on about there, that's a tall and sort of not very wide, isn't it, format, which they did at the time. And that lasted for a very short time, didn't it?
Yeah, and that format was made for one principal reason, was because they were putting these CDs into the same areas where vinyl was when CD first came out. And because, you know, if you would have made them in a regular square, they would have got lost in those holders where the albums were. Yes. So in order for them to be seen, they made them into a very tall box so they can be the height of a vinyl record.
Okay, so it's sort of 12 inches high then, but actually just the width of a CD, pretty much. Yeah, okay. So yes, those are quite nice to collect if you can find those. And then in terms of CDs, 1994 it was remastered, and then 2003, and that was the remasters that were done for quite a number of Yes albums at the time, those 70s, 60s remasters in 2003. And was that Rhino? Yes, that was Rhino, wasn't it, at that point? And they turned Tales into a digipack at that point, which I thought was quite interesting. And then the usual, well, I say the usual, but the same sort of story as with the Tormato. There was a 2009 Japan box set, including the HM CD, which is actually just the Rhino remaster, apparently, but sort of tweaked. The 2016 Stephen Wilson remaster with the Blu-ray, then the High Vibration Japanese set, and now that's the one I can't afford because it's hundreds and hundreds of pounds, hundreds and hundreds of dollars. So lots of different ones. But then I think probably his favourite is the Atlantic SACD 75th anniversary of Atlantic. They produced, like Tormato, they produced a mini LP format, which is a CD, but then it's housed in a kind of black card ring, which to make it look a bit like a small LP. So, yeah. And then there's the Japan UHQ 2023 version as well. So plenty of CDs there to collect if you're into collecting Tales.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the interesting things that he was talking about was, I think, did he say the first one was in 88, did you say?
88, yes.
Yeah, so the 88 one was actually just a direct rip of the vinyl and put onto CD, which is interesting because nowadays when you see these sort of like reissues that were done, like especially the Stephen Wilson ones that were made that everybody covets and loves, one of the big things that's on the Blu-ray is a vinyl rip of the album.
Yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
So back in the day, you know, while CD collectors kind of turned their nose at that, now it's a big thing. People want to hear like their vinyl rip on Blu-ray because it's high quality, right? So that yeah. It'd be interesting to hear that one, hear how the quality was of that one. But those later ones were more mastered for the medium of CD. And what he's probably referring to is that because the CDs can handle a little bit more of the bottom end and a little bit more of the top, upper end, they can do certain different EQ adjustments, and they could also bring the volume up a little bit more. They can almost bring it up to digital zero, like as close as you can if you use a hard limiter, which is something that is not advised, and that fell into the whole, you know, loudness wars thing. But that's what you could start to do with the CD.
So, yeah, moving on to vinyl then in a moment. But just before we do that, so I'm assuming then, listening to you talking about the different types of remastering, when you produce your records and your CDs, presumably you have to have a different master for the two different versions.
Yeah, I mean, I do a master for the vinyl, I do a master for the CDs, and I was thinking about doing cassette, and even for the cassette, I would have had to have done a slightly different master for the cassette as well, because cassette tape absorbs frequencies a little bit differently, right? And you would, you know, some of the top end wouldn't come out as clearly unless you make certain adjustments on it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So fascinating stuff. All right, then going on to vinyl, he's got a standard UK first edition, or pretty much first edition of the vinyl record, which interestingly has a matte cover as opposed to something like a German pressing of the same time, which has a laminated cover. There's a Friday Music. Now, I didn't realise this, but I just hadn't looked into it, but I love the Friday Music version of Tormato that I've got, and there's a 180 gram vinyl 2011 Friday Music version of Tales. Is that something that you've got in your collection, Mark?
No, actually, I didn't even realize that either until I saw his video that there was a Friday Music, because I know I had a Friday Music 2011 of Relayer, right? And I gifted that to one of my friends because he didn't have a copy of Relayer and he was desperately looking for one. Since I have like seven other copies of Relayer, I decided to give him that one. But yeah, I didn't know that they had a Friday Music of Tales.
Yeah. So that could be very interesting. And lots of other ones he's got from around the world, particularly interesting to me, again, like Tormato, the ones I've got. There are a couple of Japanese ones with different obi strips on them, different coloured ones and that kind of thing. And, of course, the Stephen Wilson 2016 box set. So that also sets me off thinking about the mastering, because the Stephen Wilson, again, the Stephen Wilson CD masters that he created and of his mix, again, those will be different from the vinyl ones, because I was just thinking that they sort of transferred everything over onto vinyl, but they must have done some work on it then to get it to sound, well, not the same, but similar on vinyl.
Yeah. So they would have had to make some slight adjustments as well, because again, you know, there are certain things to consider with the low end and with the top end as well. Well, especially when you're cutting the lacquers for the vinyl, right?
Yeah.
Nowadays, it's not as bad as it was back in the day, because again, technology had improved with some of this as well. So, but speaking of like different versions and masters, if my memory serves me correctly, didn't this gentleman also have a test pressing of Tales from Topographic
yes.
Oceans in his collection as well?
Yes.
So that could be interesting to hear, because who knows which test pressing version he has, you know, I mean, he would probably know if he looks at the dead wax information in there, because it could be similar to a release, right?
Yes,
or it
yes.
may not be. And if it isn't, then there could be a different sounding version of Tales from Topographic Oceans in his collection.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other one I just wanted to mention quickly was the US promo. Now, of course, this is banded for airplay. And what that means, I'll hand over to you in a moment, Mark, so you can explain it properly. But for what I understand, the bands were sections that they split it up into. So you could drop the needle into the next band and play the next part for airplay on the radio. But that seems like nonsense when we're talking about four pieces, each of a side long. So what do you think they did?
Oh, they probably did the same thing that they did with my banded version of Relayer, which is
right,
where
yes.
when I looked at it, I'm like, what is this? I looked at it and they had like little cuts and fade outs within like Gates of Delirium. Like, what? Like when you listen to it, like, what's going on here? Like all of a sudden it like fades out in the middle of like a section.
Well, and fades back in again at the same place.
Yeah.
Or?
Oh, yeah, and then when it comes back, it kind of fades back in a different in that section later, right? It's because back in the day, you know, there's no way you're gonna play like a 20-minute song on radio,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Unless it's like one of those like, you know, obscure college radio stations that have like overnight
yes.
transmissions, right? But yeah. you know. You wouldn't believe, Kevin, how many of these records I have. I have so many Rick Wakeman albums that are banded for radio play, like a King Arthur, like
nice.
Knights
yes.
Around. I'm like, really? Like, first of all, I can't imagine many radio stations playing anything from this, you know, on radio at the no. back in the day. And then, you know, to cut it down, you know, it's just, I understand the theory of it,
yes.
especially when it's like a commercial band, like let's say it's like an Eagles record or something, and they wanted to make some, you know, shorter versions of it. I can understand the banding of it, but a yes, and especially Tales, I would love to get that copy of just to hear, like where they made the edits. I mean, sometimes there's like 7-8 minutes where there's no vocals at all. So
yes.
then what do they just do the banding where they're singing and that's it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I don't know.
because I can see the I can see like you the concept, but how would you even begin to split it up? I don't know. Anyway, so it'd be fascinating to hear that. We better get on to, though, the box set that he did create for himself. And I've taken some screenshots from the video just to remind me of all the different parts that he created. And so listening to me describing this, not just you, Mark, but you listening at home, as it were, have a think about whether this sounds like the sort of item that you would have actually purchased on the 50th anniversary today and before and after. So what he's put together are two vertical, as he calls them, posters. So I suppose they're about similar dimensions to the long box that we've just been talking about. And yeah. One of those has more of a sort of starburst effect on it. So two posters and then a really beautifully made box. So if you think of the Stephen Wilson remixes, or no, actually the Quest and those sorts of box,
yes,
box sets, Mirror to the Sky. So it's got a real lid, like it's a board game or something. And and this is all full color. And he's even created a little hype sticker, which is very well done indeed. And it's got the original artwork, but the whole of the gatefold sleeve on in the middle of this box, and then the titles top and bottom, 50th anniversary deluxe box set. And then he also puts up on the screen what he's got in here. So he's got three lots of two CDs, come back to that, three lots of two LPs apparently, five booklets and two posters that I've just been talking about. So yes, no expense has been spared to create this thing, because not only has he got the illustration on the front and back with the two different versions of the Roger Dean artwork, but inside he's also put full colour inside to this box as well. So you don't just lift it up and there's black inside. There's actually another and two top and bottom illustrations there. So, I mean, even just from that start, Mark, this is a pretty lavish production.
Oh, yeah. It seems like there's no expense spared to do this. And the concept of it is very well done. I mean, you know, a lot of the times people who make box sets can be, you know, blamed for wasting space by not using those areas. And he's been very smart enough to use those areas for, you know, for putting different kinds of artwork and graphics there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to ask him about exactly how he put this together. Did he do the Photoshop type stuff? And so we'll hopefully be finding out about that. So inside then, full color 12 by 12 inch leaflets inside. And inexplicably, and again, I do want to ask him about this because it didn't say anything about this in the video, he has a picture of a lamb, and I'm not quite sure. I'm sure that's connected to the theme of the album or whatever, but I can't for the life of me think what that is. And lots of people will be telling us exactly what that's for, I'm sure. But let's wait until we talk to him. But again, yes, these are, you know, these are Gottlieb Brothers standard productions, it looks like to me, all these different. And there's an awful lot of words here. Now, for the book that I'm currently working on, the Tales Listening Guide, I do hope that Ian will be able to send me the text that he's put together here, because he's got the autobiography of the Yogi stuff in there. And I think it's stuff he's written himself. There's an awful lot of text in here, as well as some great photographs. So I definitely want to know what he's done there. And for example, the story of the topographic ocean's hot air balloon that Dave Watkinson put onto yesworld.com. So it's again, beautifully produced. And then there are four booklets, one for each side. So Nusson du Soleil, for example, Ritual Nusson du Soleil has its own booklet, and all four pieces have their own booklet with lavishly illustrated and with lots of text as well. Now, you know, all this reminds me, Mark, of some very bizarre and dedicated people who create things like whole books about single Yes albums. I don't know who I could be referring to, but I mean, it's remarkable, isn't it? I mean, not just the illustration, but the amount of text in this as well.
Yeah, I mean, I do seem to remember some gentleman who put out a book like that recently. Yeah. And it was very well done, by the way. I read it quite often. So
good.
But yeah, it's interesting that you know, he put in so much text on there as well. But that's the one thing about Yes Music that, you know, is probably one of the reasons why we as fans of the music love it, is because there's so much to sink into with this music, not only just musically, but lyrically and concept wise and stuff. So you can write probably novels and novels of stuff, you know, especially I'm pretty sure this gentleman that we're hinting at had lots that he could have put in that book, even more than he probably put in.
Could have gone on forever, whole series.
Exactly. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Okay, then. So that's, we're starting to go long on this and getting into real detail, which is what we love to do. But let's skip on now to the CDs and the vinyl. So, yes, the CDs he's actually included in the different booklets. So at the back, I think I'm right about this, but we'll talk to him about it, of course. I've got screen grabs here of two different sets. There seems to be a 50th anniversary mix, which is what we definitely want to talk to him about. Perhaps the original mix in another set of the CDs. And then, again, so lavishly produced, the two different sets of vinyl records. And he's created his own Obi strips, which I think is really a lovely idea, because they're based on the Japanese Obi strips, but he's produced them his own way in full colour and beautifully done. And interestingly, one of the sets of vinyls, he says, has got lettering from Stephen Wilson LP version, but with the original cover painting. So he's mixed and matched. So he's certainly taken the time to go into this. And then those two, you mentioned before, he has a sort of pink translucent vinyl and a purple type vinyl, which is also slightly translucent as well. But again, those are in their own individual coloured sleeves as well. So there's a kind of red and a blue or purple version of that. So yes. Well, as you said, you think these could be this alternative plastic, but certainly again with the labels and everything, full color and beautifully done.
Yeah, it's definitely very well done. And the thing that I found interesting as well is that he chose to do something that is pretty popular amongst certain Yes releases, is doing the picture disc as well, which he has in the collection as well. And what better album to use a picture disc format than Tales, with the fantastic artwork, right? So, and that I could see getting done, because that, you know, that again kind of goes back to the technology of the sort of plastic stuff there, where you can, and you just put the image in between and press it together, so that I could see a short run of picture discs being done by a company. But again, I am really interested to talk to the gentleman about the vinyl itself, because, you know, you can't by the photographs that he's taken and the video that he's shown, it's very difficult to see if that is in fact vinyl or not, right? And you know, this other material that I'm referring to, I know that they have variable colors of that as well, so it's not out of the ordinary to see a different colored versions of those as well. So it is very interesting to see what he was thinking when he was doing this. And you know what, I am curious about one thing. Is this, and of course only he can answer this, was this made so that he hopes to present this to, let's say, Warner Brothers and say, I have an idea for a box set, and here, I've done it all for you. You just have to make a press, do multiples of these for, you know, like 1,000 pressings of these. Yeah. You know, I'm wondering, is that what, was this his idea, or was this just simply just for himself?
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is very much a part one. So Tales from Topographic Ocean's 50th anniversary, a fan-made box set, part one. And next week we are very much hoping to talk to Ian Hartley himself and find out about his background. And his YouTube channel is actually quite remarkable. It's not just Yes on there. It's all sorts of classic bands. And I believe he's someone from my part of the world. He's from the Midlands originally, I think. So it's going to be fascinating if we can possibly make it work and talk to him about it. And really do, you know, give him some kudos and give him some props, as they say, I understand, for what he's done here, because it really is absolutely fabulous. All right, so end of part one. Come back next week for part two, I hope. Thank you very much indeed, Mark.
You're very welcome, Kevin.
Whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is... these go to 11.
Just before we go, here are the YMP producers and half the patrons. Yes Music Podcast producers are Joseph Cottrell, Ken Fuller and Jeffrey Cresselius. And half of those patrons are Jim Morrison, John Pickles, Declan Logg, Gary Betts, Alan Begg, Michael Handahan, Barry Gorski, Steve Perry, Doug Curran, Martin Kelberg, Todd Dudley, Rachel Hadaway, Lind, Paul Hales, Craig Estenes, Mark James Lang, Steve Rode, David, Bob Martellotta, John Holden, Stephen Lamb, Dem, Fred Barringer, Scott Colombo, Chris Bandini, David Hayden and John Thompson. The folks above help us to keep the lights on here at the new and improved YMP Towers. So if you'd like to help them, then do head over to Patreon, patreon.com/YesMusicPodcast, or just click the link on yesmusicpodcast.com. So that's just about all the time we have this week. Thanks so much for listening once again. We do hope to be back with that Ian Hartley interview next week. And in the meantime, please do keep listening and getting involved via X, Facebook or Instagram. So until next time, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.